You are a market leader operating in a highly competitive industry where efficiency and tangible results are paramount. You have a small and dedicated marketing team focused on executing regular marketing communications that must deliver immediate, measurable outcomes. You need a marketing partner that can seamlessly collaborate with your team, ensuring swift and frictionless execution, all while achieving quantifiable results in real time. My name is Tyler Chisholm, and as the co-founder and CEO of Clear Motive Marketing, we can help. Over 15 years of work with clients exactly like you from across North America, we have the team, the skills, and the processes to deliver the marketing that matters to you. Reach out to me on LinkedIn or check out clearmotive.ca to learn more. Hello and a warm collisions YYC. Welcome to my guest today, Mr. Lior Rothschild. How are you doing, Lior?
Wonderful, Tyler. So great to be back on with you. Thank you again for having me on.
And it is absolutely my pleasure. It's been years. I don't know. It was during COVID. It was a long time ago. You and
That's right.
Classic Calgary. We've run into each other multiple times at multiple events, and you know, the stars align, and I have an opportunity to kind of get an update because you are a sustainability consultant. I'm going to say that pretty broad sweeping, and I'm going to give you a chance to define and let the audience into the tent here in a minute. But that is a complex world, and as a consultant in that space, I can only imagine the different journeys you get to go on. And you've got some cool things you're working on right now, which is why you and I got together. But I'll turn it over to you. What are you working on? What are you excited about? Tell us a little bit about the journey, also with a bit of commentary of like what's happening in the space, because it's such a broad, like, where do you start? Where do you stop?
Yeah, it's a great context and framing that you've provided. So good job. For me, my whole career has been in sustainability. So I'm feeling like now I'm sort of a kid in a candy store in the sense that so many of the things that I advise people was going to be a big deal is now a big deal. So many of the questions that people had for me before, like, yeah, but does this stuff actually make a material difference to our share price? Yeah, significantly so now. You know, do consumers actually care about this stuff? Yep. Absolutely. So many of the things that were a bit of a question mark early in my career have now proved to be correct in the sense that this was the trajectory all along. In retrospect, it's nice to be able to look in the rear view and say, yup, I knew that I was getting on this train early and that it was going somewhere. But now I think that myself and many others who have been in the sustainability space for a while are pretty busy, and you're probably hearing the ESG language quite a lot these days. That's really language that investors are very focused on, and so there's a lot of resources that companies are putting in that regard. But I would say that it's evolving in a really interesting way, even far beyond ESG, and I'm happy to get into some of that with you. But
is there a correlation? Just so I understand, jump in for a sec, because again, as you're talking, I'm like, I have a question, which is my guilty pleasure. The rhetoric for ESG is high. The intended optics for a lot of corporations to put out an ESG story, an ESG report. Some companies, they're now maybe three or four or five versions into their ESG report, but relatively, speaking of Western Canada, just companies that I talk to and people I know that all of a sudden is like, oh, I just like ESG's on my desk. And that was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Is the rate of change and what you're seeing truly why, for what I believe you got into it for, was making positive change that affect the world that we live in? Does it line up with the amount of rhetoric and the amount of times ESG gets mentioned on a earnings call, for example? Do you, as someone who's probably, I'm from our last call, really believe in this at your core, is it lining up? Is the rhetoric taking over, or are we actually doing the things that we're also talking about? Is that a fair way to ask that question?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to ask the question, because we are at this really, really critical juncture. People who are doing this work and are really leaning in as professionals are really walking this tightrope between sort of the greenwash and the woke lash.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, gotcha. From one end, people are telling you, this is all sounds good, but where's the impact? And on the other end, people are saying, why don't you just stop all this frivolous nonsense and focus on the core operations of the business, make sure that it's returning revenue to the shareholders. And so there's a really delicate balance. The truth that really needs to come out is that it is a way to generate value for owners of the business, so yep. shareholders. And there's lots of statistics out there. I don't need to highlight it for you because it's really easy to find, that demonstrates that companies, including those who were in the eye of the storm during the pandemic, have proven to be more resilient than others who weren't seen as ESG leaders. But I also believe that we are now at this critical point where it needs to be about impact. It's no longer just about having data and demonstrating that, yes, you are committed to doing something around climate change and that you're measuring your greenhouse gas emissions and whatnot. It's really about creating impact. And for me, you know, and getting back to, you know, the reason that we reconnected here, and you asked me right at the top, kind of what I'm up to. My latest thing is that I'm launching a new book. I'm very excited about it.
Books don't write themselves, so congratulations on that.
it was definitely a labor of love and a long time coming. Nice. I'm happy to be on this side of the writing process. I'm really enjoying the conversations that I get to have as a result of having this book out there, because what I think is a bit unique about what I've tried to do with this book is that I've talked about a whole range of concepts and issues that are important to me and ones that I've leaned into my whole career, including social purpose, diversity, inclusion, circularity, and eliminating waste, net zero emissions, sustainable procurement, and others. But I've specifically told it through the eyes of events professionals. And I think that's a bit of a unique twist on it. It does speak to my own experience of running a sustainable events company for many years. The Calgary Stampede was my biggest client. And so I had this really great platform where I got to really learn about change management. And you know, one of the basic lessons was, you know, whatever you do, you know, if it's a sustainability idea, it needs to be tiger tested with, you know, people who are very focused on, you know, well, the show needs to go on, the lights need to be there, the food needs to be served, the music needs to go on, the gates need to open, the people need to arrive. And when you're facing with, you know, all these constraints, including the time pressure that major events tend to do, it makes for some really interesting stories, and it makes for an engaging way to tell stories about sustainability. So I some of it is based on my own experiences, but some of it is based on interviews that I did with the sustainability director of the FIFA World Cup and many other major events around the world.
As a marketer, I really appreciate, not only did you pick a subject matter, but you picked a niche, you picked an area, or you picked a target, you picked an ideal customer profile. Say, okay, I really understand this space because I've lived in it. There's a need and there's an appetite for it. Again, just thinking about the profile of like, okay, do you have a subject and do you have an audience who cares about it? And you lined those up, but you also took it from an area of personal, like I've lived in this space as well, which I really appreciate, like the credibility of like, I'm not just it's not just my hypothesis. You can't turn the lights off to reduce your energy bill. You can't not have food because you might have food waste. Like these are all musts that are really, you can point to them, because if an event is missing any one thing, oh, I love the topic, but the food was shit. Oh my God, the room, the chairs were uncomfortable and the lighting was terrible. Like it's just going as an event, you have a very fickle, immediate response crowd.
It all really matters. Yeah.
It does. You can't just cut it out to find efficiency. You actually have to think about how to deliver with efficiency while not compromising the guest experience. That's a tricky, which is a really good snapshot of what many companies are wrestling with, right? How do I do both?
Absolutely. And I feel like getting back to your framing earlier about, you know, where we are in this journey, I do feel it is very much about this question of how do you ensure that nothing is sacrificed in the user experience? We can't say, well, you know, this is a sustainability effort, and so therefore your other priorities around quality need to suffer. We need it all. All these little things matter, especially in a hyper-competitive world. And so, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about in this book is the really important thing to consider is that if you plan for it properly, you can redesign your existing activities with sustainability, with a more purposeful approach, and with inclusivity baked in. And the problem usually lies in the fact that people try to do it as an add-on. This is the way we've always done it. Now we're adding in a new dimension, which is like this environmental thing, or this, you know, like, let's bring in more diverse speakers. That's not going to work. It's really about going back to first principles and saying, what do we want to achieve? We know this thing is going to have a footprint. So how do we make sure that it's worth it? How do we make sure that this is an important opportunity to do what I believe events can be, to be incredible forces of change in our society? And that's really the crux of the book, is to say that events touch us all, and we're kind of underutilizing this as a really important medium to show people an inspiring future of what society could look like for those few hours or those few days that this event takes place, so that when they walk away from your event, they really are demanding that their community look like this and feel like this the rest of the year.
Does that mean that I have to go back to the drawing boards? Like, is this a design thinking exercise where I love what you said about so often, well, this is the way we've done it, but we're just going to bolt these new pieces on, and it becomes a Frankenstein experience. And that whether you're building anything in life, oftentimes you're like, oh, I could modify it. And we've all gotten something where you're like, there's some great case studies out there with large airplane manufacturers who just kept bolting on an old airframe, and eventually it failed versus going, we got to start fresh. But that's expensive. That's time consuming. Is there a bit of, do you confront that argument head on? Because the reason for the status quo is very obvious. It's just easier to kind of like, even in marketing, we work with clients like, can we just do a refresh? We're just going to pick up from last year. I'm like, first of all, it's never a refresh. It's never just a pickup. And it's going to take more than 5 hours. But the idea of like, well, we'll be efficient if we just tweak it versus actually being efficient from starting over with a different mindset. Is that part of, it feels like chapter two or three of the book.
I think the key question in all this is, where do you start?
Yeah,
and I talk a lot in the book about piloting, and then being able to scale, right? And so, I think that's the key, is thinking through what a pilot looks like and what a fully scaled version looks like. And yeah, it can be really daunting to do everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah,
and so.
Which is often a reason why we don't do it, right? That's the story that stops us. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so doing something that's measurable is really important to do. And I also try and really address some of the, some of the kind of like controversial issues in all this, like, for example, carbon credits. You know, everybody's flying to events, traveling to events. I don't believe that events will actually disappear. I think they're really important. They're vital to our growth and well-being.
Well, back to your point about coming together as a society or as a community or as a village, like we've been doing that for longer than we have ever, you know what I mean? And remote and virtual has its place, but it's a different thing. It's not other, it's not instead of, it's totally different.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that when we have these really important levers for how we essentially curate human experiences, that does come with some responsibility, but also an opportunity to demonstrate and really pull the veil off of it, to say, instead of hey, we're doing something sneaky that's going to measure whether people actually want this environmental thing or something that really promotes more inclusion. It's really engaging the audience to say, we think this is important. Is this important to you? If it is, we're trying something new, and go with us. And it's really about taking people on a journey, and typically people feel more loyalty to the kind of events and the kind of organizations that engage them in the process of what they want to do, the kind of world they want to build, the kind of community they want to bring together. And so that's a large part of what I'm trying to say. I'm the tagline for the book is, grow your audience, shrink your footprint, and change the world. And I really do feel like if you're intentional about that and you're engaging people in a constructive way around these issues, that it can be done. Sometimes, yes, there is a cost associated with doing these things, but there's a huge cost in not doing these things too.
Right. Do you find, like, would this be a book that I would read as a business leader in any sector? Like, is there a lot of just thinking about it almost as just a metaphor or as a story? We all learn really well through stories. This is about a specific industry on a journey, but every industry has its own version of this. Like, is it written in that way? And I don't want to project that, but I'm like, that's my brain. It's like, this seems like I could take some lessons out of this, whether I was in the event business or not.
I believe so. I think the issues are very transferable, and certainly from the point of view of wanting to learn more about the circular economy, carbon markets, carbon credits, issues like sustainable procurement and greenhouse gas emissions management. It's all there. The publisher that I've worked with has been very good at giving me advice where they said, don't try and write it in a way that's too on the nose for everybody. Better if you really hone in on a target audience, and then just make sure that the issues are very transferable so others can take something away from it.
Solid marketing advice. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
It's for everybody. Then it's for nobody. That's
right. Yeah.
Like, customer is everyone. So you'll find that there is,
right. You'll find there is language that's specific to events professionals, partly because they're a very underserved industry when it comes to sustainability content.
Go where the competition isn't is also a solid business strategy.
Right. But I do believe that if you're somebody that wants to learn more about these issues, then it's all there for you. And I think it's told through these interesting stories that are unlike reading it in a textbook or something that's maybe a bit clunky.
Can you give me an example of of an event or a story? I love any good storyteller, which you are. What's a good story in the book that kind of maybe blew you away a little bit when you started to learn about it? You're like, wow, like that was really cool that organization did that thing, maybe against all odds, or the fact that they just came up with something unique that maybe blew you a little away. Because I'm assuming you did reams and reams of research in writing this book.
I did do a lot of research. I did have some really great conversations, but I'll maybe just dance around your question for a moment.
Okay.
Because I do want to, you know, because we're both in Calgary and I love telling Calgary stories. Mm-hmm. I do want to give a little shout out to the Calgary Stampede because they did something that I think was super unique.
Okay, that's cool.
So we have this compost and recycling program that we've done with the Calgary Stampede over many years. And after the pandemic, the Calgary Stampede was restarting their programs. Mm-hmm. But the crew that had been delivering this work over many years, you know, kind of all sort of disbanded and gone their different ways. And so in an effort to try and get some human resources to actually deliver the compost program, the Calgary Center for Newcomers was engaged. And it wound up being not only a really great environmental program that had continuity, especially after the pandemic, where there was essentially nothing happening over a 2-year period. Mm-hmm. But it was then when the program came back, it was delivered by a number of new immigrants and some of them refugees from countries like Syria, Afghanistan, and the Ukraine. And I just think it's such a really wonderful opportunity to bring together something that has a very positive environmental outcome and something that's very measurable. You can literally weigh the amount of compost that's that's being diverted from the landfill. The fact that it's also delivering a social impact for communities that would typically not even be able to access the Calgary Stampede, and then turning them into lifelong fans of the Stampede and giving them their first ever Canadian work experience, and so that their resume actually says the Calgary Stampede on it, is like just this golden touch of a.
It's got all the pieces, and you really, when it comes to like large scale events, we are as a city, like sometimes maybe like we've got something in our backyard that we're known for the world over. That they are willing to do something, and I would say it'd be really easy from the outside to falsely look at the Stampede as a very traditional, this is the way we've always done it kind of mindset. I don't know why I think that, and sounds like it's completely incorrect, which is good.
I have this one part in the book where I'm partly being facetious, but I'm also basing it on a real statement that was said to me when I was telling somebody that I was working on environmental programming with the Calgary Stampede. They said, "Really, the Stampede does that? I would have thought they'd just like roll it up, light it on fire, and shoot it out of a cannon,
dump it in the river behind the Stampede ground."
And so I think there is a perception, but I think that. Yeah. That's the other really unique thing about these major events is when you look behind the scenes, everybody's doing something well. Everybody's got lots of room for improvement.
Right.
And in the case of a Calgary Stampede or another major event like that, you're essentially building a city. You're building a city that needs, waste treatment. You know, it needs potable water. It needs security. It needs infrastructure. And so to literally design the kind of city you want to live in, you know, in the case of the Stampede over a 10-day period is just a really unique opportunity to like get it right. And, you know, each year you're sort of chipping away and improving.
Yeah. I love the fact that everything is practice and everything is a test run, like you said. And we tested it this year. We're going to do it better next year. Okay, that one's under control. Let's do this thing. Like it's such a cyclical, the power of being able to test and learn. And actually, I love what you said. What are you measuring and know what you meant? And like, why? Why are we measuring it? And what are we going to do with that information? And being deliberate about that. What an amazing proving ground. I've never thought about it as like designing the event around the mindset of like, what city, what ecosystem, what level of community, like how do you want to feel? You need to feel safe. You need to have access to the things you want, and how an event is like a little microcosm of that in terms of a reflection. That's a cool concept. At minimum, I like to get one cool concept at every one of these calls. I usually get 10 or 20. So that's my one so far. I'm like, I never thought of an event that way. But it's so easy to put you off back to an attendee's experience. Like my perfect version of an event is also going to be different than yours, which is a great definition for how we all live in a city together too.
yeah, absolutely. Well, one other interesting sort of side note, partly in the story that I just shared, but partly in something that's, I think, a broader issue is how do people communicate about this stuff? I mean, perhaps you're hearing this story about the Calgary Stampede for the first time right now. And, I'm not a representative of the Calgary Stampede telling you this story. So I think that there needs to be a better way to communicate these kind of outcomes, but across the board. And I think that one of the reasons people perhaps fail to communicate the really inspiring parts of, you know, what's going right, both, you know, in the events sector, but anywhere, is like, there's just such a hyper awareness of like, greenwashing accusations and, you know, leads to like green hushing. And so people are like, well, let's just put our heads down. We'll try and get it right. But whether we get it right or get it wrong, we won't really say much about it.
Yeah.
And I would like to see that changed. I hope that that's one thing that I can do in illuminating some of these great stories is to encourage people to want to hear more of these stories and to also understand what greenwashing actually is, that is something I cover in the book, so that they can understand when somebody is deliberately trying to mislead. Obviously, that needs to be called out. But I think most people are kind of trying their best here. And if we assume good intentions, we might just be surprised at how much good is being done. And literally, there is like a, in events, you know, front of house and back of house. Mm-hmm. You know, if we could dig through more of like what's happening behind the scenes, I think there's just a lot of really great stories.
Maybe with a little bit of psychological safety thrown in there too, so people can.
Yes.
Like you point, you get attacked, or you get there. That fear stops a lot of change. Fear stops a lot of everything, right?
That's right.
And
yeah.
You look out there. We have our world was we're savage with each other. So, and a lot of times maybe unjustified.
For sure. Yeah. And sometimes it is justified. And sometimes I think with a fast moving space like ESG and sustainability, there haven't been traditionally a lot of standards. And so it really is kind of easy to perhaps manipulate. But I think that one, we're in a new age where there is a lot more standards in place. There are a lot more bodies that certify whether this is a good thing and whether this is a something that you know, isn't all it's cracked up to be. And so, yeah, I say bring those on, and more standards, more certifications, more kind of like verification and auditing kind of processes. I think that's a good thing. But let's also give kudos where they're needed as well.
Are we seeing, like, on this road that we're on, which is a series of lifetimes ahead of us, that standardization, that agreeance of like what's important in this province versus that province or north or south of the border? I've had a lot of people on, you know, from the energy sector, just talking about some of the challenges we have, because there's a lot of inconsistency. Maybe good, like, again, no one's seeing bad intentions, but that inconsistency breeds risk. I don't know. I'm not sure if, you know, fear, you know, reluctance to act. Are we getting better? Like, are we on a path where we are going to be a little bit more, like you said, that this is standardized and this is trusted, and these are the numbers that we can all look to and know that there's some validity there.
So if you're working for a company that is in the process of reporting, you know, to investors about ESG or sustainability outcomes, like, there is a whole alphabet soup of, you know, categories and standards that didn't exist even 3 years ago. You know, there's all kinds of climate legislation, climate disclosure legislation. The SEC in the U.S., just passed their requirements for all publicly traded companies. There's, you know, the California standard that came up first, which really drove a lot of the scope. The Canadian government has new standards in place this year. European climate laws. There's an International Sustainability Standards Board, Canadian Sustainability Standards. None of these things existed even like 2-3 years ago. All this is new. So I think we're adapting. And we're recognizing that this stuff is as consequential as, like, you know, disclosing, you know, like in the oil industry, what your reserves are, for example, and, you know, what your revenue was last year and how much money you're returning back to your shareholders. It is as material in terms of guiding investment decisions as any of those issues are.
But to your point, the things you just mentioned are all standardized, and you can hold up company A versus B versus C versus D. Look at the size of the reserve, what their G&A was, how efficient they were getting their barrels out of the ground. Those are things that we can all look at as investors or as outside parties and go, oh, I see how you compare to you or you or you, whatever.
Yes.
Until we get there in this space, it's going to continue to feel frustrating, challenging, not as concrete as maybe as it needs to. But if we're only 2 to 3 years in, we're not even out of the first inning yet, right?
You're right. And, you know, as a consultant, so many of the companies that I work with, they're not pushing back on these standardization requirements. They're saying, oh, thank goodness, finally, you know, this stuff was happening, but it was so inconsistent, and they're, you know, it's kind of like Wild West. And, you know, like, we're reporting in Canada about this, but in the US doing a completely different thing. And if you happen to have exposure in Europe, then it's vastly different. So having a little more consistency just makes a lot of sense. And anybody who is, you know, sort of saying this stuff's a fad, or, you know, like, it's like woke capitalism or whatnot. No, it is just a recognition that some of these issues are very serious, that there is change happening, that there is a lot of investment going into this broad issue of transition, whether it's transition of energy, transition of technology in general, or transition of how people, you know, interact with traditional business models. For example, the sharing economy is something that, you know, is a new, you know, kind of a new opportunity in the market. So there's just like a lot of transition, a lot of disruption happening there. Money is flowing in that direction, but when it's just like kind of a market mutation, then people want to understand how their money is protected and how things compare across the board.
Yeah, to being able to create like what does good look like and how do I compare it to like what's good versus bad, or what's awesome look like. And what I'm hearing you also is we're just still in the early days of that level of clarity and all agreed upon, like, this is the way we do our financials. This is the way we measure our reservoirs. You know, and there's been lots of examples over the years, I'm thinking Enron, or where people have got really creative with how they were responding into their standardization and what that created, you know, thinking about all those risks when people want to, back to your point about, you know, if someone is greenwashing and you like, is it like, I think you did define it as like purposely manipulating the data versus someone trying something and maybe not having the right data or not having like executed on the test properly. That's different than purposely trying to mislead investors or the public. Like, just because I think it gets thrown around a lot, right? And it's a great way that you can just minimize something without really being held accountable to why you're saying that.
Yeah. I should clarify, you know, I perhaps simplified a little too much. There's a lot of different forms of greenwashing.
Okay.
Because, you know, saying we're excellent in this particular thing might be true in kind of like one example or one area of the organization, but it may not be consistent all across the board. And there may be, you know, like, for example, we put a shadow price on carbon, you know, at this price. Sure, that sounds great, but then you might approve like this mammoth project that completely blows that budget and is like, oh, did we not at all look at a shadow price on carbon in this example? Whoops. That's one example.
So what you're saying is this complicated?
It's complicated. There's a lot going on. And at the end of the day, what really matters is, perception really matters. People want to be able to trust that the information coming from the source that they are trying to get, you know, some sense of disclosure from is a trustworthy source. And when inconsistencies come up, there should be a clear explanation and an attempt to rectify that. And when there isn't, then it festers.
Red flag.
Yeah.
Circling all the way back to the beginning about, you know, I love what you said about like, hey, I got on this journey. I held the faith when maybe in hindsight, I felt crazy at the time or I was the only one thinking this way. If you see the industry now, is it like, is there a flood of people getting into it? Is this a huge opportunity? Like, it sounds like, to your point, like, I know a few people like yourself that have been in this for a while and it's like, hey, I was in this in the 80s, like before it was cool. Are you seeing just a huge wave of individuals now getting involved in this? And also, are you seeing companies that are, is there a high demand? Like, are people able to find individuals, professionals that are maybe 5 or 3 or 2 years into their journey versus someone like yourself to be able to come on board and take these roles? Like, what's the talent pool look like for this?
Yeah, I would say it's growing really quickly. And so the talent pool is growing rapidly. Mm-hmm. I'm really feeling quite fortunate with the set of experiences I had, because when I started in this space, and I have a background in the oil and gas industry. And when I started in the oil and gas industry, I came in through a water NGO. And so, you know, kind of like water issues was kind of my thing. And then I got into disclosure and then community engagement. And then somebody said, what's your experience with indigenous communities? And I said, I'm really interested and I've been learning. Oh, great. We need you to, you know, like,
you're perfect. You're just the guy we needed.
Yeah. We have this new, gas, coal bed methane, was the sort of like terminology back in the day for this new resource that was being opened up. And we need you to go and you know, attend some of these community meetings and conferences and get to know these different stakeholders. I mean, that would never happen now. Like, I had no formal training, and I learned a lot, and I'm so thankful for the experiences I had. But now that requires like a whole set of very deep specialties.
How many years ago was that? Just to give context of how much it's changed. Is that 10 years ago or five?
I'm talking like between 2006, 2009.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 15 years. Leo, you look too young to have been in it. I didn't want to make any conclusions.
I had hair back then, believe it or not.
Oh, but okay. I don't know if I believe that. I only know this version of you.
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us, my friend.
Yeah. No, so I'm really privileged to have had a chance to learn and make mistakes in a way that, you know, sort of like helped me to learn. Whereas I think people now, you know, get into this space and already have like a very deep specialty right out the gate and tend to stay there for a little while.
Okay. So we're in that phase of it where it's like, I can specialize in this, that versus being the generalist is what always happens in the early stages of any open up or new opportunity or new technology or whatever category you put this in. New way of thinking, I think.
Yeah. And frankly speaking, that generalist experience helped me write the book, because the book is really tying together so many different kinds of issues into one coherent narrative. And I appreciate picking
the event thread, because it's like to tell the whole narrative over multiple industries, the book would just, it would turn into a textbook, or it would turn into like, there's no narrative. There's nothing for me to follow. And as a storyteller, you got to take I appreciate the tangible aspects of the event space, and kind of maybe why you picked that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not why I originally picked it, though. I originally picked it because, when the pandemic hit, I closed the business, the sustainable events business, down. And then when I started getting phone calls again, hey, can you come in and help us with this? I was like, I don't really do that work anymore. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if I had like a DIY book,
I just could send sort them. Like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just here's everything I know about this. That was kind of initially when I started writing it, and I actually started writing it during the pandemic, when the events industry completely got decimated. So I thought, what a unique opportunity to sort of, promote a vision for what I think the future of events could look like. And then when events did come back, I started to realize that actually there's like a growing sustainability movement in the events industry, but it's quite nascent, and there's a real hunger for some expertise. And so I was like, well, I've got something to say on this. And so
that's cool.
Did
the pandemic turn, like, was it the catalyst for change in the context of, like, all of a sudden, events have come back with a vengeance? Did that downtime, or that, that period that we had to land the plane and maybe do some of the repairs, which oftentimes the old joke, I got to change the engines while the plane is flying, but that industry got parked. And I'm not saying that that was easy or that that was a good time for anybody, but when it came back, did we capitalize on that opportunity? Hey, what'd you do during pandemic? Well, I learned how to cook sourdough. I learned Italian. Yeah. I learned how to run a different type of event. Yeah.
I want to say yes, but I'm not sure that, okay. I think like I said, there's a growing sustainability movement out there. There's a number of experts that I interviewed that are, I've mentioned or featured in the book. And I think that they're really inspiring. So I think that they're affecting some change. But I think that because the events industry went a few years without making any money, as they come back from that really difficult period, they just want to make their money back.
Yeah, the war chest is empty, and the dry powder is used up, or whatever, metaphor you want to use.
Yeah, and so many, especially young people, who were, it was kind of like their first main job out of university, were kind of like, well, I'm not making any revenue. I'm going to completely switch industries. And many of them have not come back. And so the industry is like actually very resource constrained. And so they need to kind of rebuild. And so rebuilding is a difficult time to talk about, very future oriented issues. But at the same time, it's the right time to be reflecting on, how to rebuild in a way that is more stable long term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how to attract that new talent pool.
I appreciate the challenge of like being basically out of the game for 2 years and then coming back. That's not a time when you're going to see a lot of net new investment. You're going to see like, let's just try to get our legs back under us for the companies that made it through, right?
That's right. Yeah. If you're an events professional and you made it through the pandemic, you're still a business owner. You're still a service provider. Like, hats off to you. You found a way to be creative. Maybe you pivoted to online events. But now, live events are back with a bang. And so I really do hope that How We Gather Matters is, a timely intervention to say, let's not just go back to the way things always were. Let's kick it forward to what a new generation of this stuff could be.
And there's your mic drop moment right there. A timely innovation, a timely opportunity to change the way we do things and look at it from a broader perspective. I really appreciate it. And is the book live? Can I go buy it? Where do I get it? Like, what's the details? Because, we all want to make sure people know how to find this.
So the book is available to pre-order now, but it officially launches in April.
And, oh, nice. Oh, sweet. So this will be right when we launch this episode. So it's perfect. Really catching it in real time.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of the reasons I thought, what an exciting opportunity when you offered me a chance to go quickly. I was just like,
I see. Now I understand the plot thickens. I love it. No, life is about timing. Lior, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on today. I appreciate the work you're doing, the insights you shared, and high five, man. Keep up the good work.